Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Mana on the Rocks. It's I, new year, new Joe. Joining me, new year, new Atlas.
Hello, everybody.
This week, we're talking 2023. What happened? The sets, the cards, the people, places, and things. Looking forward a little bit at 2024. It's a good time. Bit of a shorter one. It's a bit of a shorter one. But that's fine. That's okay.
Yeah, we're just talking. It's a brief review of some of the things that we talked about this past year, and then looking forward to next year.
Absolutely. However, I'm looking forward to these announcements. Atlas, do we have announcements this week?
I think we do. Starting off strong, leading with the things that everyone cares about, two tournaments coming up very shortly in the first quarter of the year here. We have February 10th. It's going to be the CEDH4. It's going to be hosting their tournament up in Issaquah, Washington again. So we'll be there. Come play with us. It's going to be part of a new circuit that they're hosting for Washington. So very, very exciting. Come check it out. You can sign up already. You can register. It's a really good group of people. Really great tournament. And then after that, the next month, we have on March 9th and 10th, there's going to be a tournament put on by Aegis Games from Bellingham. More details to come, but we do know that it'll be the weekend of the 9th and the 10th in March. So it's a two-day event, I believe, and that's going to be larger. There's going to be a pretty substantial prize pool. So keep your eyes tuned to Discord and the Aegis Games social media and things like that. They're going to be at it's called the Competitive Gaming Convention, I believe. So more details to come, but that's where it'll be hosted at. So I will keep you up to date with the announcements on this channel as well. And then other things to look forward to this year from us, our gift to you guys this new year, is we have some new content that we have that'll be released here hopefully by the end of January, early February.
Yep.
We got some video content coming out. There'll be some gameplay and then maybe some play-by-plays and stuff. So we have video content for you to review. And then on top of that, we're also running our own league.
This is big.
Yeah, this is a cool idea that came from our thumbnail editor and like video guy, Christian. He came up with this sweet idea for a league that sort of like simulates sort of a tournament, so that we can get that TEDH vibe to you as far as like tournament gameplay and like reviewing video footage and stuff and talking about different things. So we can make sort of like get back to our roots about being a more educational podcast. Educational for CEDH. And so that should be coming out here soon. Soon-ish. It'll be the end of the first quarter is when that video will probably release, because we do need like 3 months or so to run the whole league. Got to run a bunch of different games for people, and then we'll be recording our top four matches. So, and then Joe and I will be commenting on them and maybe discussing it with the winner and stuff like that. So
definitely, we got a couple of good ideas going, because we didn't want to just do like generic gameplay or whatever. Like our thing has been like, we care about tournaments a lot. So how do we best explain the tournament in just like a one shot game video?
And yeah, we think this is a good way to do it. A lot of time or effort for the viewers, as well as all of us who work on it, being me and Joe and Christian, and then we got our camera guy Jake as well. So we got a couple people who we're really depending on, have been awesome in helping get this process started.
Absolutely. Cannot thank them enough.
Yes, and so that should be coming out later this year, so stay tuned to the channel. We'll keep you updated as we have more info on that. But I think that's all of our announcements.
Excellent. Well, shout out this week to the lucky patron, Rez. Thank you for your continued support. You should come on down and get a drink with us. So, Atlas.
Yes.
In a word, how was 2023 for you?
It was good. It was a great year for Magic, I think. At least in my opinion. Saw a lot of meta shifts that I appreciated. Saw a lot of like broadening of discussion around different strategies and the viability of cards and stuff. But there were also some drawbacks too, such as like the over corporatization of Wizards of the Coast and stuff like that, like their IP and things.
Mm-hmm.
But
yep.
Other than that, I think it was like really good.
I struggled to remember a lot this year, I think. Like we were just going through all like the sets and stuff, and I'm looking through and I'm just like, yeah, that's a lot of stuff that came out. That like I'm looking at these lists that we pulled through, and I'm like, I feel like we're missing stuff. But I guess this, like, what we're looking at is just all the big stuff. It might be like Secret Lairs that's like muddying the waters for me, or like every set having like four commander decks attached to it or something like that. I don't know. This year was weird for me. I think I like the direction that CDH is going. I definitely don't like the direction Magic as a whole has been going. But I think one of the cool things about CDH is we have more control over like how our format goes. Really, the only thing that like interferes is like new cards printing and like bannings, I guess.
Yeah, and there's like, and even then, like the community definitely still has pull with things that are banned.
Yeah, 100%.
The RC does, for all of the gripes that people have with it, the RC does still listen to the community. So
yeah,
at least to some degree.
Yeah. Yeah. The over-corporatization, the influx of various IPs, kind of drowning out what makes Magic Magic. It's hard because this has been the first like full year cycle that I have been living, breathing, and consuming like Magic content, and it's just not the game that was there for me when I first played, and I think that's fine. I think that's ultimately good, but I mean, we can wax forever on how like the direction of the game is going. That's not why we're here, though. We're here for real gamer hours, Atlas. Real gamer moments. We're here to talk about everyone's favorite format in the game, CDH, and kind of how this year has been. Yeah. So coming out of the winter of last year, everything felt very stagnant. I remember that being like one of the main reasons why I felt like I wanted to do, or I approached you with this podcast, just because we had ideas that we felt were very like out there and different and weird and just like went against everything. And now, I don't know. I like the direction the meta has shifted. I like a lot of the discussion that's been having around like card choices, deck viability, and all that stuff. I think all that is really, really good. Now we're kind of moving on to like the next phase of, I guess, the discussion, as it were, which is kind of like not necessarily like the meta game as in like deck playability, but like the game outside the game, like politics and whatnot.
Politics, I think tournament structure, like, because I think when we started this a year ago, when we started talking about maybe starting a podcast even longer back than that, it was like, it was the whole, oh, everything should be turbonized, nothing else is viable, blah, 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 blah.
Yep.
And we really don't see that
no.
as much anymore. Like, there are still people who are like, Nas is the only way to play the game, have to go fast, blah, blah, blah. And as always, there's like a grain of truth in everything, right? But I think even like the most dedicated ROG side players out there, they're like, understand that, yeah, there are a lot of other ways to play the game. And like, so even playing ROG side, sometimes you aren't trying to jam a turn two Nas every single game. Sometimes you just have to sit back and take the wax and like play the game a little slower, based upon your pod and like learning to contextualize everything based like within the game. So I think the next big discussion, like evolution of the format wise, is gonna pertain a lot to what does the future of like tournament play, organized CEDH, look like, more than it is now. And shout out to Evidence. Thank you so much for all they've done, like creating Command Tower.
Yeah,
and, like,
no, this, it's straight up, yeah.
Yeah, the top deck circuit, all this stuff is just fantastic for like starting to standardize those things. They've done so much to like sort of like unify and solidify the different groups and like rule sets and whatnot, so that there's like comprehensive like sort of like standard to look at.
Yeah.
But I think that like going forwards, even that'll change even more and evolve even more and maybe consolidate even more, which there are pros and cons to as with everything, but there are pros and cons to that. I was talking to one of our friends this past week about they're a judge, and they were at a judge conference, and there was a little bit of a discussion about like what CEDH is going to look like for judges, and like how the eminent software and standardization has like had a lot of like benefits for judges, and like what they need to do moving forwards. And so it's really sort of like branching out and affecting like other aspects of the game too. So we might see judges who really like make similar like rulings, like outside of like the very cut and dry, like this card says this is here's how it interacts, but like things like hidden information. That's been a big one that like we've talked about the past year. It's like different tournaments treat it differently. Things flex, things are like always like oh well you control your hidden information, so you can show an individual player a card. You don't control your hidden information entirely, so you have to, if you're going to show one player something, you have to show all players that thing. Things like that, like I think we're going to see a lot more like homogenization in terms of like interpretation around those like those less intrinsic aspects of the game, which I think is positive.
I think I agree with that. I think that moving towards the sort of standardization that Emma Hoos has like offered to everybody is super critical in terms of, like the longevity and viability of CDH as a format. Because I mean, at a certain point, the community is going to grow big enough to a point where like they're, I'm not saying like that's like a pro tour because that doesn't exist anymore, like a GP or whatever, but like that style of like recognition. I mean, Commander was born from, you know, board Magic judges, you know, and now here we are. It's literally just how everybody interacts with the game at this point, for better and for worse. So you have to kind of look at that path and go, okay, well, what are the next steps that we have to anticipate? And I think you're 100% correct. I think kind of ironing out those like major niche areas of the game and kind of standardizing that, so that way when you go to an event, when you go to a tournament, there's this expectation or this understanding of this is how the game is played, this is how it's operated, this is how we handle, you know, corner cases and whatnot. And I think this next year is going to be really, really interesting. I think the whole regional circuit with Emma Hoos is going to be really, really interesting to follow. And I think it's going to be one of the biggest catalysts for CDH, I think. I think it's exploded over the last year. I don't think anyone can disagree with that. But I think this is going to start driving things. You know, this is going to be, okay, you know, depending on how they decide to do coverage, if they do coverage, it, in a perfect world, they're going to follow what SEG did back in the old day, where touring around the country, different event every single weekend, some shops hosting a tournament. You got Cedric Phillips and Patrick Sullivan in the booth, you know, commentating every match, for example. You know, that would be the way to do it. Give people, you know, like the weekend game to look forward to, the weekend game to talk about. I think that would do. And that's just something that Magic has been missing for such a long time in my eyes. That just like consistent competitive like tournament experience and coverage. You know, you'll probably have people that decide to go and grind this entire circuit, you know, go to as many tournaments as possible, you know, local, area, national, whatever, because that's where the heat is. That's where the games are happening. And I think that's going to be really, really interesting to follow. I'm excited personally for the next year of CDH. I think we're going to see a lot of really interesting growth. I think the conversation is going to shift in a very interesting way. The meta is always going to evolve, and that's going to be, it's going to be super interesting to follow. Yeah, I'm excited.
Yeah, absolutely. So outside of like the evolution of the format, what were some of the other highlights for CDH this year? Were there any cards that stood out to you? Anything else? Players? Like, are there anyone up and coming on the scene? Or is it all just the same people?
There's not really, you know, any Magic cards that we really need to discuss. There were no cards released that had any impact on CDH whatsoever. kind of a dry year in terms of, like, playables for the format. If I'm being honest, but I'm not being honest. I'm lying through my fucking teeth. Wizards R&D is smoking some insane wizard crack. I don't know what they're doing, man. They're just slapping split second on random cards. They're printing the One Ring. They're printing Bowmasters. I think this year is going to be marred and marked by the impact of the One Ring. There isn't a single card. Like, I haven't looked through all the cards that came out this year recently, but I can glance through the list of cards and my eyes just fix, or the list of things that came out this year, and my eyes are just fixated on Lord of the Rings in the CEDH lens. Like, running through the list of sets that came out this year, Dominaria Remastered. What came out in Dominaria Remastered that mattered for us? Not a whole lot. We had some like fringe playable cards and some experimentation and some interesting cards that came out of it, but nothing on the whole I would say that was like super critical.
Yeah, I don't really think so. A lot of card like discussion has centered on things from Lord of the Rings, just because that set was so wild.
So
taking all the cards that you can think about, all of the sets and everything from 2023, have to do like at least like a top three, top four cards from the year. What would be your picks?
Number one is the One Ring. 100%. Like, I think if anyone decides to make any sort of like top list, I haven't looked at all the other content creators' top lists because I wanted my own opinions and thoughts and rankings and all that stuff. The One Ring has to be on top of the list. I think if you are not putting the One Ring at the top of your list for impactful cards in the format, in the game, I struggle to think that you paid attention to the game beyond the kitchen table, which is totally fine. But everything has been One Ring centric, so that has to be the top card, and then Bowmasters is right after it. Beyond that, Atraxa and Elishnorn, I think, fight for slots 3 and 4. Quick Reflexes, we haven't seen a whole lot of it, but I think that card is nuts.
Yeah, it came out towards the end of the year, so there hasn't been a lot of time to see it played.
Yeah, but we haven't seen experimentation with it yet, but my skin curls every time I read that card. That card just does so much on a one green instant. We thought Veil of Summer was bad. Yeah, I mean, like, those are really the cards that, like, I'm gonna remember out of this year. I mean, granted, like, things like Lost Caverns of Ixalan haven't, like, fully set in with me. And there's a bunch of cool Doctor Who cards. There's the Clone Effects. There's that Flesh Duplicate. That card's really sick. The reprints this year for Commander felt pretty normal for the most part. We got a Mana Crypt reprint this year. That's always a good year in my book. I think all of the fast mana. No, we didn't get. I was gonna say like Mana Vault, but the Mana Vault's like $50-$60 at this point. Most of the fast mana got reprinted. That could get reprinted. I think like Lotus Petal is like one of the main ones that didn't get a reprint, because we got Jeweled Lotus, we got Mana Crypt. Those are like the big ones. Yeah, there's those. Mom Aftermath. Nothing really came out of that. Mom proper. I mean, Elishnorn, Phyrexia, All Will Be One, Atraxa, Dominaria Remastered. But those collection of cards, I would say would be it. Bowmasters, One Ring, Atraxa, Elishnorn. Like, in terms of like cards printed this year, 100%. The conversation's been so dominant on like those cards being new and printed into the game. Now, like, there's a bunch of conversation happening around other cards that weren't printed this year. I think this year we've seen a very conscious choice in players and a little bit on designers to just put big stat lines on just good creatures in the command zone. It's like the shift from Najeela to Kenrith, for example, is so apparent. You know, where like Najeela especially in a Bowmaster's world, one draw trigger on the stack and your Najeela just dies. Like that, I think that had did way more for shifting people out of Najeela, more so than people going, well, Kenrith has every ability in the game printed on a 5/5/5. Like, what more do you want?
Yeah. Yeah, there's definitely been, there's a lot of big creatures. We've been seeing that sort of like you said, designers just stapling stats onto good stat lines onto cards for really no reason. I mean, I have my like top five list right here.
Yeah, I was gonna ask you what were the cards for you?
Well, one of them is just probably like slot 4 or 5, so it's further down the list. But the one of the ones that I think is a perfect example of that is Dauntless Dismantler is for literally no reason a 2-mana 1/4. yep. on top of having two relevant lines of text. So like they just decided to shove that one right in there. I have Atraxa as well. I think like Sheoldred and Elish, the five mana Elishnorn, were runner ups yep. as well. Yep. Didn't quite make it to my list, but they were there. But once again, 7/7 with a bunch of text for really like for what is effectively an on rate cost for a 7/7 with.
Oh, I thought of another one. I completely forgot about.
And then Talion.
Talion was big. Yeah, I didn't play Blue much this year, so I'm just like, yeah, Talion, that came out this year, right?
Yeah, yeah, it's a 4-mana, 3/4 with flying that also damages your opponents and draws you cards.
That's the same card.
Really, really wild. And then, of course, slots 1 and 2, Orcish Bowmasters, and then at the very top, the Ring, because, heck, that card is just so goddamn good.
Fuck that fucking card, man. God, it's taking me back to the 2-week period where I read the One Ring for the first time. I went, oh, that's pretty cool. Yeah, whatever. And then I saw it played for the first time and I went, what? This is the best thing you can be doing at any given point in the game whatsoever. Yeah. You can't convince me otherwise.
That's basically how my perception went too. I was like, I'm not sure if this really has a slot in Commander. And then it was played the first time against me and I was like, oh, nope, that goes in every single deck.
Yeah. Yeah, and then I think that is very much what happened with a lot of people, even across like all the formats, because it's ruining Modern, right?
Yeah, well, it's just like when you print crazy stat lines on your creatures that stop your opponents from winning the game, or like you print really strong interactive spells like Dress Down and things like that, and the formats start to slow down because you're trying to encourage your opponent, like your players, going back and forth and not just having a one like. A super one-sided, like, dominated game where aggro either rushes in and takes it on two, even though the game's not over yet, or control answers that the aggro deck's threat by turn two, and now they're doing nothing while control just hits all their land drops and then eventually wins the game with a 6/6 that isn't very good. Mm-hmm. A 6-mana card that isn't very good.
The equalizer at some point, but I think the equalizer, it just pushes everything. It doesn't stop or hinder one thing, it just pushes everything forward because everyone can play it.
Because now everyone's playing all these crazy good interactive spells in all the formats, and including CDH. We got the Evoke Elementals, we got Dress Down, we got all the Force of Negations, Pact of Negations, like all the free counter magic and everything. On top of Modern can play all of like the Four of Forces and things and Evoke Elementals and blah blah blah. And so the games get slower, which means that the cards like the One Ring just get better.
Yeah, the slower value engines where you're like, yeah, sure, you're drawing a card immediately, but if you can untap with it, you've divinated, and you protected yourself. So the usual turn off that you take, hey, this is a conversation that's happened so many times, so anyway, you're protected the turn that you play the Ring, which means if you are the slower mid-range control deck, the turn you take off to set up the investment that you're putting is protected, because... it's protection from everything, and it's on you, which is an incredibly relevant line of text that, like, still to this day, I have to check my things and say and see if it's damage or loss of life because of the One Ring protection.
Yeah,
So the card I forgot about that probably should be on my list is Broodlord that came out in Mom.
Well, that came out this year.
Yeah, Broodlord came out this year.
Yeah, that card is pretty good.
really, really good Rakdos Turbo piece. Or other like random turbo piece.
Yeah, that card is very strong.
Yeah. Yeah, so I think of the sets that came out this year, I think I like probably Mom the most. Yeah, probably Mom the most. I think there were a lot of cool cards in there. I really like Elishnorn, although I'm not playing Elishnorn right now because every single time I play that card, it gets copied and then I cry. I don't know. I think I hate Lord of the Rings. I think I'm on the fence. I think I'm on the side of... I think the set was really, really cool. I think it introduced a lot of cool flavor things, and it got a lot of people into the game because Lord of the Rings. But I think Lord of the Rings is a spectacular fail in every single category for why I care about this game. It's a Horizon set, which means that on principle, it is power creep in a box. You are playing... You're at a point where you're playing... almost not quite, but like nearly block constructed with it. Like it is, these are cards that you're going to slot into every single deck because they're so individually powerful, so uniquely they can take over the game. And it's a other, it's another IP just forced into the game. Like, and those two things just deliver like the 1-2 punch of just like, Jesus fucking Christ. Like I'm fine with power creep, but like, holy shit, like not One Ring and Bowmaster's power creep where like it, I hate the One Ring because every deck has to play it because it's very, very good at what it does. I hate Bowmasters because it shoves a lot of other potential strategies out of the format by sheer virtue of it existing.
I don't know if I agree with you on Bowmasters so much. As an avid enjoyer of the One Ring, like, so happy that card was printed. But mechanically, I agree with you. The card should not exist.
Yeah, as a player, I like playing the card. As a person who enjoys game design, I hate those cards.
Yeah. That said, I think Bowmasters, there's a lot to be said for it on both sides. Like, there's a lot to hate about it. There's a lot to like about it. I think Bowmasters, for all the gripes that people have with it, as someone who does play Mana Dorks in their primary list, I think the card is honestly fine. Sometimes it shoots a dork, but it's just something you have to keep in mind. And I think a lot of times, I think Bowmasters is a lot less impactful than people think it is. That's been my experience playing the card, at least.
What makes you go along that line of thought?
I think that deleting boards can be very strong, and based on the situation, it can be very useful. With incremental card draw, like, I think that most of the time it's most beneficial to shoot someone in the face with Bowmasters.
I have been face shooting a lot recently.
I think that is way more impactful to do that if the game's going longer, like we've said they tend to. And if it's only one damage per card drawn, that matters even, like, it doesn't punish card draw the same way that people think it does. Like, yeah. You're basically paying, an on par rate. You're paying one life for one card, which is actually, technically, it's below rate. Two life for one card is really what the rate is. Huh?
It's about the going rate these days. We're not really like paying one life for one card these days.
Yeah.
Unless you're playing Necropotence.
Yeah. So like it's pretty fair. Plus your opponent's invested resources into it. I think the most egregious part of the card is that it makes the Orc army.
God, I think if the Orc army didn't exist, I think I'd have no problem with the card.
I think the card would be really bad if the Orc army didn't exist. Yeah. I think you'd have to up the stat line, actually, to make the card playable.
1-2, so that way it can't be Bowmastered. I think that's the most annoying stat line.
Yeah, it'd have to be like a 1-2 or a 2-2 or something like that.
2-1, I think I'm fine with.
I think even 1-3 would probably be fine, just because either that or like remove the ETB trigger like the Alchemy set did.
Yep.
When they put it into Arena.
Yep.
So I think there are a lot of ways to fix that card. Same thing with the One Ring. A lot of ways to fix that card, just none of them are what we ended up with. I think my personal favorite set, I liked Wilds a lot. I am a big Eldraine fan, and I'm Italian simp, so I think that seeing that draw engine on a creature was super awesome. I love the flavor, the color, the artwork of that card, and on top of that, I think that Wilds, while it didn't produce a lot of value for competitive Commander, I think, like, for casual and high power, introduced a ton of new cards. Like it boosted up the adventure mechanic in terms of playability. It showed us a lot of like really, really flavorful cards that completed runs from the original Eldraine set. So I really, really liked Wilds.
I do like Wilds for giving us the Gingerbread Knight.
That's such a cool card.
It's a card
I would ever play in comp? No, but it's so neat.
Yeah, no, it's super cool. I like it a lot. I think if I have to walk back my statement a little bit, it's that I think the flavor for a lot of the sets was really, really high this year. I think the flavor was very on point for every single set that we got. Like, the Doctor Who set, the Lord of the Rings set, for them being IP injected into the game, I think it was done with care, with class, and with respect to the source material, and with some amount of respect to the player base. And even for all, like, the main series set. Like, I mean, you know, the whole story with, like, Planeswalkers are gone. Like, that's insane. That's wild. Never in my day did I think that we'd see that, but here we are, you know? I haven't followed the Magic story a lot because I think it's probably bad, but I haven't read it, so I don't really have that opinion, I guess. But, no, the flavor is on point for basically every single set. there's always at least a cool card. And I'm like, oh, that's pretty cool. I see what they're doing there. That's pretty neat. I feel like I got that consistent feeling every time I read the spoilers for each set.
Yeah, the only one that I really had an issue with was Jurassic Park. I think that one was just a little like, yeah. I get it. Dinosaur World with Dinosaur like Exxon and stuff.
Yeah.
It felt a little tacky. It just didn't mesh at all.
Yeah, the Jeff Goldblum secret lair. That's wild. That's very insane. Going back to kind of, I guess, our main shtick, tournaments. I think we both have a lot to talk about when it comes to tournaments this year, both in like the decks we played, the people we played, the decks we played against, personal growth, all of that stuff. Walk me through kind of your look back of your tournament life this past year.
I don't really know what to say, to be honest. I mean, we started the year and we did okay. We didn't really like start placing very high in tournaments and stuff. We were trying to make control work in a very like hostile to control world, and so the year went on and we started to like find like new strategies and new cards and bless up on Displacer Kitten, that card. I don't think that was this year, but within the past 2 years. Yeah, it really like, that's really what pushed the deck into viability. And starting at the top end of this year, some great suggestions I received from people on like cards to try, and just like entering into more and more discussions with people in the community and seeking out new players, better players to try your hand against. I think those have all really helped me to become a better player. And eventually we were able to cap it all off by getting to the top of the regional circuit for the year, which was a super, super exciting experience.
I like that. No, I'm not gonna keep putting you on blast. No, you. I think that's correct. I think that's really. I think that's pretty accurate. You know, it's wild to think about how far, I guess, all of us have come, kind of in our little group. Like, I think a lot of us have done a lot of real growth and progression in a lot of our gameplay. Now, I guess talking about mine, like this has been a rocky year for me competitive wise. Like the meme of me going 1-3, that was born this year. I'm gonna keep carrying that into this year. Hopefully not for long, but I'm gonna keep carrying it. But at the same time, like I have learned just an absolute truckload, just about a completely different style of game that I was just not privy to previously. Like my brain was just not wired for this kind of, you know, competitive cardboarding. And now I think, you know, I have that footing. I remember, we talked about, I forget what we talked about at one point. But you talked about kind of your level up moment, where like literally everything started just clicking into place. And I think I've gotten that at this point, where I feel like every game I'm playing, I'm just playing out of my mind, where like things make so much sense as to why they're happening. I know the moves I need to make. I know the actions I need to take, the things I need to say, the way I need to carry myself, board positioning, all that stuff, yada, yada, yada. And, you know, at the beginning of the year where I'm floundering around on Rakdos jank and Teemer jank going, I don't know what I want to do. And capping this year, or going into this year with like, okay, I have like two pretty consistent decks that I think I'm just going to keep bouncing between for the whole year, being the Baby Pod and your version of Hellcat. And it's been wild. It's been weird. Because I'm not used to getting dubs, but I've been getting dubs, and I'm like, I don't know how to handle this. I only know how to handle failure. So it's been interesting. I'm very, very keen on where the next year takes me, takes you, takes us, takes everything. Because this just means, okay, we've put in the hours, we put in the commitment. Let's see if we can try and drive some sort of payoff. No, it's not the ultimate thing. Like I'm still gonna be happy going 1-3 any day of the week. Sort of. But, you know, I think I have a more real chance of not going 1-3 now than, whereas previously it's like, yeah, I'm pretty much guaranteed just hit my average and then that's it.
Yeah, and that's awesome. And it's like looking from the past to the future, we've got a lot coming up already. Just even towards the start of this year, there are a number of tournaments that are people are sending out their notifications and they're piling up already. So really excited to play more stuff.
The quiet season's over. We're back.
The quiet season's over. We've rested and it's time to get back into grind mode. Time to start training again.
Off season's here. Our off season's done. We've had our off season. Now it's time. Because I think the first tournament for us is gonna be what, late January, early February.
Yeah. The earliest one that I know of for right now is the CEDH 4 event, which is going to be on February 10. And so that's something that I will be at for sure. I have already registered.
Yeah, I'm going to be there. I know that much for a fact. So I guess let's talk stories. What have been your favorite like things that have happened the past year in terms of the game?
My favorite story from the past year.
Stories, moments, interactions, players, locations, events.
Oh, I think okay. I think my favorite story about the past year has been the meme of Stunt Double and Cloud Shift.
Oh,
those
my
cards
God.
Are so good. And I just think it's so funny how those cards I start seeing them pop up in like the randomest places now. I'm like, hey, I started playing that card. And people may not know it, or like they may disagree with the choice or whatever, but like we have some players in our area who still meme on Stunt Double. And I think it's hilarious because that that and Cloud Shift have taken so many games for me that would have been unwinnable without them. Like, from that position, other cards just don't get you there. And I just think it's really funny that they still receive, like, it's more fake hate at this point, but they still receive hate, and I just love it.
Yeah. Let's see. Do I have any... See, I asked this question fully not having, like, a moment or anything. At least positive. Like, it's a lot of negative stuff that, like, bubbles to the surface. Like, all my failures kind of just, like, flashing before my eyes. I guess I like answered it already, but I guess I can rephrase it in a different way. I think just like the overall growth, I think I've just made leaps and bounds in that. Despite how I would end mentally and emotionally at the end of every tournament, I still went to a lot of events this year. More than any other time in my life, have I committed to the art of getting better at this cardboard game. And it's, I don't know, it's just a testament to how, like, I don't know, I think it's gonna be easy for me to say anyone can do it, because I feel like if I can do it, anyone can do it. And I think that's a big thing for me. And, you know, obviously, you know, countless losses, fewer wins, many tournaments, many people, many late night sessions of me just staring at Moxfield and going, why am I playing these cards over and over again? You know, I think that's kind of like my biggest takeaway. My favorite thing is like my resolve, I guess. Shit, what else happened this year in Magic?
That's a really good question. Sheldon Minery died.
That's true. It's hard. Like that sucks. It's awful. You know, the creator of our format passing away is such a heartbreaking moment, you know. But I also think it's pretty cool. I insofar as like he created this game that is so beloved by many, that so many people know his name and are able to enjoy his version of Magic that he and a couple of buddies just played when he was bored at a GP one day. And now it's like the biggest thing in Magic. I think that's awesome. I think that's an incredible legacy to leave behind.
Yeah, it's definitely something special. And with everyone who plays Commander, competitive or not, at this point has a lot to be thankful for terms of like all that he did for the format. So truly a legend that will never be forgotten.
The Pinkerton thing happened this year. I completely forgot about that.
Is that this year? Wow.
I thought that was like at the end of last year. No, that was this year. That's that's crazy. I've heard that. Yeah, that kicked off this year. Pretty much kicked off this year anyway. For those in the know, Mom Aftermath was basically spoiled. Like, I don't know how you would not know this at this point. Mom Aftermath was basically spoiled in its entirety because someone got given product like it was like a month beforehand, like 3 weeks beforehand, like an insane amount of time before like even spoilers started. And then WotC sent fucking goons after him to go get the cards.
Yeah, pretty surreal, to be honest.
Dude, what a time that, like, we're sending, like, the Gestapo after people for cracking packs.
Yeah, a little wild. Hopefully that does not start us off this year as well.
Or something else crazy will happen. Like, there's always something crazy happening.
Though, to be fair, it would be on flavor, since I think Karlov Manor is the first one. So it's like they send those like detective, goon, secret police, whatever you want to call them, people out and figure out who stole the packs.
Mm-hmm. I truly cannot think of like other like random things that like happened this year that were like impactful, at least to me, or like enough for me to like remember or like look through or anything like that. You know, it's. I guess thankfully been a quiet year for like random controversies, I guess, for Magic the Gathering. There wasn't like anything like crazy. Oh, I okay, hold on. We've mentioned the One Ring. How can we not mention the fucking like one of one ring that sold for $2 million? That nearly slipped my mind. I nearly forgot about like we have one of the most expensive trading cards in the game.
It's just a treasure token.
Yeah, it's just a you're never playing that card. You're pulling it out for a token. Like I'm
pretty doesn't Post Malone, isn't that Post Malone's thing? Is he just has it like hard case or whatever and uses it for a treasure token?
Probably.
I think that's what I heard.
I don't know. I think it's ridiculous. I think it was created to get back at Pokemon for having a lot of expensive cards and a lot of hype, and Hasbro went, create the most expensive Magic card possible, and they said, what if we did the One Ring and made it a serialized one of one print? And they went, that's incredible. Make that shit happen. And now here we are. I think serialized cards are cool. I think it's interesting. I think it's a way to add a really cool collector's mark on just random cards. That like it makes cracking packs open. Making cracking packs open pretty cool. Makes collecting pretty cool. It's a fun little chase thing. I think it's interesting. I just am cynical for like the one of one ring. Yeah, that's all I got.
Yeah, I think we basically covered the whole year as far as Magic goes at this point. At least everything that I can think of that was like impactful.
Yeah, yeah, and then, like we've talked forever about the meta shifts, the card choices, all that stuff. Well, pretty short introduction to the year here at Ye Olde Manna on the Rocks. Thank you all for listening. We'll catch you next time.